A whale carcass sinks far below the waves. A feast for deep water creatures and a lesson for us humans. Author Daniel Krauss says,
the best death of all, I think, is when you can die and your death means something to others.
And he's talking about his new thriller, Surprising Depth, this Sunday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
And I'm Juana Summers. Mac McCormick was a blues researcher who created a legendary private collection of early blues music.
Now anyone can listen to it.
I have to tip my hat to him for taking the time to find musicians that up to that point are only relegated to a piece of shellac.
Now news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. The White House says there will be restrictions on what Iran could do with any funds unfrozen under an ongoing agreement that led to five Americans being released from prison to house arrest in Tehran. White House spokesperson John Kirby.
The funds could only be accessed for food, medicine, medical equipment that would not have a dual military use, and there would be a rigorous process of due diligence and standards applied.
He says negotiations continue. Iran has an estimated $6 billion in assets held in South Korea. The Illinois Supreme Court has upheld a law that bans the future sale and possession of semi-automatic firearms and large-capacity magazines. Mawa Iqbal from member station WBEZ has more.
Republican State Representative Dan Calkins had sued state officials, arguing the law violated the Illinois Constitution. He expressed disappointment with the court's ruling.
The Illinois General Assembly and the governor can decide to abridge our Second Amendment rights. What's to keep them from abridging our First Amendment rights? What's to keep them from abridging our Fifth Amendment rights? Where does it stop?
Gun reform advocates and Democratic officials are applauding the decision. Governor J.B. Pritzker, in a statement, said the law will, quote, keep mass killing machines off of our streets. The law, however, remains under review by the federal courts, where plaintiffs claim it violates the Second Amendment. For NPR News, I'm Mawa Iqbal in Springfield.
Wall Street ended the day in mixed territory. The Dow gained 105 points to end at 35,281. The NASDAQ was down 93 points. The S&P 500 down 4. You're listening to NPR News. Prosecutors in Ecuador have charged six Colombian nationals for the assassination of a presidential candidate in Ecuador. Meanwhile, as NPR's Ada Peralta reports, a memorial for the slain politician is scheduled in the capital.
According to prosecutors, the six Colombians were arrested in a property in Quito, the capital of Ecuador. Prosecutors say some of the bullet casings found at the scene of the assassination match one of the weapons found at the property. Fernando Villavicencio, who had campaigned against organized crime in Ecuador, was gunned down after a political rally on Wednesday. Prosecutors say an autopsy revealed Villavicencio was killed by long-distance gunfire. Investigators, they say, found 64 bullet casings and an unexploded grenade at the scene. Meanwhile, the president of Ecuador declared a state of emergency and deployed the military, vowing that the August 20th presidential elections will continue as planned. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Mexico City.
Wholesale prices rose higher than expected last month. The Labor Department says the Producer Price Index, which tracks changes in prices that businesses pay to suppliers, was up 0.8% in July from a year ago and are up 0.3% from June. That's the biggest monthly gain for the PPI since January. And Wall Street did end the day in mixed territory, the Dow up 105 points, NASDAQ down 93. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Procter & Gamble, maker of ZzzQuil Pure Z's gummies, designed with melatonin for occasional sleeplessness to help people fall asleep naturally. Learn more at ZzzQuil.com. From Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org. And from listeners like you, who donate to this NPR station.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
And I'm Juana Summers. Ecuador is still in a state of emergency after the assassination of a leading presidential candidate. Fernando Villavicencio was shot in the head multiple times outside a campaign event on Wednesday. He was a vocal critic of organized crime and government corruption, and his death is the latest in a string of violent incidents in a country that used to have a peaceful reputation in the region. Joining me now to explain how Ecuador reached this shocking moment is Will Freeman. He's a Latin America Studies Fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations. Will, welcome.
Thanks, Juana.
I just want to start off by asking you, what went through your mind when you first heard about Fernando Villavicencio's assassination?
It just struck me as so tragic. I was in Ecuador in April and May. You already feel when you're there that life has been turned on its head by this huge surge in crime since 2020. But what you're seeing now is it's not concentrated to one part of the country. No one is safe, not even a candidate running for president. And I think a growing number of Ecuadorians feel almost abandoned by their own state institutions, left to fend for themselves.
You mentioned a growing surge in crime since around 2020. What's the cause of that? Why is that happening?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a story that's been building for a while. People look at homicide rates shooting up since 2020, and sometimes they assume that that's when the crisis began. I'd argue that it began years earlier. Now, there are several features of Ecuador that make it an ideal country for drug trafficking. And lately, we've seen the amounts of cocaine trafficked through the country just going through the roof. So one is that it's sandwiched between Colombia and Peru, two of the world's largest coca producers. Ecuador also has a dollarized economy. That's very attractive for crime groups. It allows them to launder money easily. And Ecuador also has just had a devastating experience with the COVID-19 pandemic. And with poverty and hunger spreading, it created a big pool of recruits for organized crime. But on the other side, it's also, this crisis is a, accumulation of serious political blunders by president after president. The armed forces and police and judiciary all became more susceptible to corruption, to co-optation by organized crime. And unfortunately, what you see today is polarization between the left and right, which is preventing Ecuadorian politicians from coming together and finding a solution to this terrible crisis.
Hmm. Stepping back a bit here, can you help us get a sense of the broader regional consequences of Ecuador becoming more destabilized?
Mm-hmm. Well, one that we're seeing throughout the region, it's even, arriving to the U.S.-Mexico border, the fact that Ecuadorians this year have become the second largest group by nationality to cross Panama's Darien Gap in their path towards migrating towards the United States. So you're seeing really an outflow of migrants, refugees, asylum seekers, which we haven't seen from Ecuador in 20 years. So that's one major consequence. Another is that as Ecuador has become this hub for cocaine trafficking by criminal groups from as far away as Mexico, there are even Albanian criminal groups involved. Mm. It's really given organized crime in Latin America a new hub to operate from, a new hotspot. I think we're going to be seeing all sorts of reverberations across the region.
Election Day is still scheduled for August 20th. What will you be watching for as that day approaches?
Well, first I'll be watching just in the short term for how this investigation advances. If we really get new information that could potentially impact the election itself, Noticias Caracol, a Colombian news station, has reported that six of the suspects taken into custody in the killing of Villavicencio had cell phones on them, which had in those phones had recorded three calls to Ecuadorian politicians. Now, we don't know yet the name of those politicians. This information has just been reported, not verified. But I think we need to really get to the bottom of whether there's potentially a political story behind this assassination. To some extent, all the candidates will be scrambling to pick up the votes that Villavicencio would have had. And I think all of them will be trying to send a strong message on organized crime, show that they're the candidate that's best positioned to tackle impunity and resolve whatever happened in this terrifying incident.
That was Will Freeman. He's a Latin America Studies Fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations. Will, thank you.
Thank you, Juana.